Hulk Hogan is dead. The man who perhaps single-handedly dragged professional wrestling into the mainstream died on Thursday at the age of 71. Today we look at Hulk Hogan's influence on a whole generation that came of age in the 1980s and 90s and ask, what is his legacy?
Hulk Hogan, ready to lock up with Mr. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
You, Mr. Perfect. The host is fine, not in action. Listen to this, Jesse. Hulkamania is running wild.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, ready to lock up with Mr. Perfect. And this shootout, just about ready to begin.
Should be a great matchup.
It's News Talk Daily. Extra, and I'm Ciara Doherty, and with me to look back at the legacy of Hulk Hogan is Angus Og McNally. Now, Angus is, of course, an actor and a writer. He stars in the new film Botcha, which recently won the Best Irish Language Prize at the Galway Film Fla. But at heart, he is, which I think is going to surprise some people, a professional wrestler. So when he's not treading the boards, you'll find him ringside providing the commentary for OTT Wrestling. Angus, you are really welcome to the podcast.
Delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
We're going to talk about Hulk Hogan in a second, but how early did you get interested in the whole world of wrestling?
Well, I certainly became a fan at the peak of that Hulk Hogan era. I'm a child of the 80s, so that kind of late 80s, early 90s, when he was really in his prime, and the kind of Sky TV was coming to Ireland is when I really got into it. You know, we had the World of Sports stuff from ITV in the mid 80s and stuff, but this was when the real razzle dazzle of pro wrestling came, and a character the size of Hulk Hogan, I think, as you said, for a whole generation, just captured and captivated us with this larger than life superhero in real life in front of you on the telly and kind of captured a generation.
What was it about him, do you think, that really did capture children's hearts and imaginations?
Well, I mean, obviously the message that was portrayed was this very wholesome thing of, you know, say your prayers, do your training, take your vitamins, and you too can have 24-inch python biceps like Hulk Hogan can, you know. And it was that thing of it was all very wholesome. It was, he was the hero, the good guy who, however beat up he got, however difficult things got for him, always found a way to topple the bad guy eventually and end up on top and show that the good guy wins. And I think kids kind of intrinsically buy into that as a story.
Were you one of the Hulkamaniacs then?
Absolutely I was, yeah.
Did you have the doll? Did you know the moves?
Match Hulk Hogan against the Macho King Randy Savage.
Ooh, yeah, my elbow smash will finish Hogan, guaranteed.
Hogan slams him again.
Absolutely. We had all the little Hasbro figures, some of the big LJN figures as well. Yeah, no, we would have had a lot of the toys in this. And I mean, and that's part of the legacy as well. You got to look at the crossover impact that this character of Hulk Hogan had. Because up until then, I mean, you know, pro wrestling had come from the carnivals, from the traveling circuses. It was a little shady. It was a little underhanded. It was a little murky at times. And this was what brought pro wrestling into the mainstream. And that crossover, as I say, into the merch. They'd learned from what happened with George Lucas and Star Wars. They knew that you could market to kids and get this incredible merchandise out there, and so they rolled it out. And so there was Hulk Hogan ice cream bars, Hulk Hogan posters, bandanas, teddies, dolls, you name it, whatever you needed, they had the merch.
So bring me through then the story of how Hulk Hogan, along with a promoter, Vince McMahon, helped to take WWF, which later became obviously WWE, into the mainstream.
Well, they broke a lot of rules, honestly, is what happened. I mean, there were certain kind of gentlemen's agreements back in what they call the territory days, where America was effectively divided up into these territories with individual promoters running individual areas, and wrestling talent would travel around from area to area kind of every 6 months or every year or a couple of years to refresh the character, bring in new characters to have different feuds with, whatever else. And there was a lot of a gentleman's agreement between those territories that you wouldn't encroach on other people's territories and you wouldn't kind of try and steal business or whatever else. And eventually, when Vince bought the company from his dad, he kind of shattered a lot of those rules, saw where the market was going, saw what cable television was going to do to America in the 80s. And he started buying up all those other territories and kind of encroaching on other people's spaces and bending rules and blurring lines here and there. But ultimately, it became this nationwide phenomenon that no one could keep up with. And pretty much sooner or later, all of those smaller territories ended up either being bought out by Vince or just him putting them out of business, because He saw what cable television was going to do and marketed on that big razzle-dazzle scale. Took a big punt on it, like, you know, mortgage the house was down to his last penny a lot of the time, but the gamble paid off and he became, you know, the billionaire character that we now know today.
One of the things that I remember so clearly from watching WWF, and we were obsessed in my house. I mean, on a Saturday of WrestleMania, we would pull the curtains. We would be allowed to bring in our favourite cereal into the sitting room. We could stay in our pyjamas and we were allowed to watch television for maybe 2-3 hours because they knew how excited we would be for this, particularly when it got to the feuds between people like Macho Man Randy Savage versus Hulk Hogan, when Elizabeth, do you remember Elizabeth got involved? My sister actually told the family WhatsApp group yesterday that she took her confirmation name Elizabeth after Elizabeth from WWF. She will probably disown me for telling that story, but we were genuinely obsessed.
Yeah, it's the stories like that, you know, Miss Elizabeth, who was just this stunningly beautiful, wholesome character who was in real life married to Randy Savage, the Macho Man. And that story of how Macho Man and Hogan came together to form the Mega Powers, this, you know, unbeatable tag team, only for them to, the Mega Powers exploded because Randy Savage saw, as he famously said, lust in your eyes. He saw lust in your eyes looking at Miss Elizabeth. And he thought Hogan was going to make a move on his woman. And again, look, this is the glory of pro wrestling. People say, anyone who's doing junior search English knows that the essence of drama is conflict. And there's no purer expression of that conflict than a good guy versus a bad guy squaring off against each other in the ring. It's very rudimentary storytelling. It's basic storytelling. I think that's probably why kids buy into it as much as they do. But it's simple storytelling that anyone can buy into. And I love the fact that what I always say about pro wrestling is the joy of sport is that it always has the potential for that Roy of the Rovers magical moment, you know, 87 minutes on the clock, the corner kick comes in and you score the goal and you win the soccer match. So that's the joy of sport, is that there's the potential for the Roy of the Rovers moment. The joy about pro wrestling is there's the certainty of the Roy of the Rovers moment because it's scripted, because it's storylined, because it's planned. So we can create these moments for audiences, and it's absolute privilege to be part of. And yet those stories are iconic, and they live with us and kind of shaped our childhoods for many of us of that generation.
Yeah, we spent so much time on the family WhatsApp group yesterday reminding each other of carrying out the clothesline. Apparently I was the person that clothesline was carried out on, thank you to my brothers. My sister remembers being caught up in the figure four leg lock. We remember reenacting, you know, the Undertaker arriving into the ring going dung, dung, yeah, dung, and somebody pretended to be in a coffin. I mean, we have such innocent, fun childhood memories that have come from WWF.
Yeah, and you know, these big iconic characters that are easy for kids to recreate, as you say, The Undertaker, the likes of a Jake the Snake, the Million Dollar Man, Mr. Perfect, all these larger than life characters, Yokozuna, the big sumo guy, that they are big archetypal characters. And in the same way, not to get too highbrow about it, but in the same way that kind of, you know, in the Italian commedia dell'arte style, these are stock characters that are, they're kind of the building blocks of theater the world over. And one of the joys of pro wrestling is it is a very distinctly American cultural phenomenon. Obviously, they have pro wrestling in the lucha style in Mexico and in what they call strong style in Japan, which is a much more kind of hard-hitting, almost shoot style there. But the kind of the real, the carnival style, the razzle-dazzle, the bells and whistle, the pyrotechnics, that is very much a quintessentially American phenomenon. And as their gift to the world, it's not a bad one.
Yeah, he became a global brand. He moved into TV series, he moved into movies. Did he really become a template for many of the stars that followed Angus?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think most people would acknowledge that, you know, Hulk Hogan walked so that Dwayne The Rock Johnson could run. You know, if you look at those people who are coming through now, the Dave Bautistas of the world through Guardians of the Galaxy and all those movies, and even our own Becky Lynch is now making more moves into TV and film over the last little while. He did set the template for that. And again, it's hard to really capture just how difficult a transition that was at the time, because in the same way that maybe people in theatre or film and TV might look down on pantomime and see it as simplistic or for kids or whatever else, any of us actually within the business know that panto is one of the hardest gigs to do, and we understand that it is an incredible training ground for audiences to bring them in and expose them to theatre and storytelling. And so I think people in Hollywood at the time would have looked down their nose at a pro wrestler and said, oh, you're one of those bodybuilders who does that fake fight bathing in spandex and baby oil. And so for him to cut through at all was such an amazing achievement. And we've seen now with the John Cenas, the Dwayne Johnsons, the Dave Bautistas coming through that it is possible. And they're not only they're breaking through, but they're excelling. But Hogan was the one that broke down those walls in the first place and made it possible.
And I know, as you say, the moves were fake moves and it was all choreographed and all scripted, but it took its toll. It really did exert pressure on the body.
Yeah, no one comes out unscathed. And you have to remember that at the time, certainly through the 80s and the early 90s, the schedule those guys were working was absolutely brutally punishing. They were wrestling maybe 300 days a year and traveling, you know, 300, 400, 500, 600 miles a day to get to the next town to go and work the next show to then move on. And so Hogan, his finishing move was that leg drop that we remember, the iconic leg drop, which seems fairly simple in that you're not rattling your head, you're not bending, you're not coming off the top rope or anything. But if you think the impact of that on the spine every single, like 300 days a year for 20, 30 years, like he had lost a couple of inches in height because his spine was so compacted from the impact of that. And that's the real cost of this stuff. I mean, what you can't get away from is the fact that, yes, these people are entertainers. Yes, they are sportsmen and women. But fundamentally and foremost, they are essentially stuntmen and women. And while you can mitigate the risks, while you can work with each other in the ring to protect each other, there is an inherent risk and an inherent impact in this work that does take a toll on the body. Nobody comes away unscathed. That's the simple thing of it. And, you know, these people are putting their bodies on the line for our entertainment. And I think we need to be respectful of that and appreciative of that.
But in his last appearance at the WWE, he was booed by the audience, booed by supporters in the crowd, because he had become a controversial figure. And I think his legacy now is a really complicated one for lots of those people who were huge fans in the 80s and the 90s, not only because of the sex tape, but because of the racial slurs that he owned and admitted.
Yeah, I think complicated is exactly the word for it, that we have to be honest and forthright and upfront about it. Shakespeare has a quote in Hamlet, he was a man taken for all in all. And, you know, you have to take the good with the bad. You know, you mentioned the racism that was there, that was accepted by him and admitted to. And that really has changed and maybe tarnished the experience of fans with the Hulk Hogan character and Terry Bollea, the man who portrayed him.
I'm not a racist. I never should have said what I said. It was wrong. I'm embarrassed by it. But a lot of people need to realize that you inherit things from your environment. And where I grew up was South Tampa, Port Tampa. And it was a really rough neighborhood, very low income. And all my friends, we greeted each other saying that word. We teased each other with that word. The word was just thrown around like it was nothing.
But also, you mentioned the sex tape, as it's referred to. I mean, that was revenge porn. And he was a victim of revenge porn, took them to court and was awarded, I think, something in the order of $140 million in damages. And, you know, I think we can't get away from, you know, the idea of him being a victim of revenge porn as opposed to the kind of almost half joking around his sex tape was released. You know, we need to be careful about how we talk about that. It's a complex legacy and history. You know, also from people within the business, Hogan is widely regarded as the man who shut down attempts to unionize in the way that the NBA or the NFL would have unionized, which meant greater protections for the players in those leagues. And an awful lot of wrestlers through the 80s, 90s and more recent times arguably would have had better working conditions and pay and healthcare and stuff if Hogan hadn't stopped that push towards unionization. So it is a complex history that needs to be taken all in all. There's a huge positive impact, a massive cultural impact for the character of Hulk Hogan, and then for the person behind that character, Terry Bollea, was a complex human being that had many failings and many frailties. And there's no denying that. There's no shying away from it. I think the only thing we can do is we can look at it in its totality and say, this is the full picture of the character and the man who portrayed him.
He was a big supporter, too, of Donald Trump. He gave a speech at last year's Republican convention.
But you know something? I see the greatest tag team of my life standing upon us, getting ready to straighten this country out for all the real Americans.
And Trump's cabinet even includes a senior figure from the world of WWE.
Yeah, Linda McMahon is the education secretary there. Linda was the wife of Vince, and not just the wife of Vince. Linda was very actively involved in the running of WWE, particularly through that period where Hulk was on top. So yeah, they are very deeply entwined with the Trump team. And again, that's another thing to factor in. He was a big vocal supporter. You know, in some respects, he's a white man at 71 years of age from the South. What else might we have expected? But yeah, for certain people, that really leaves a bad taste in their mouth.
You mentioned Becky Lynch there. We have produced some stars here in Ireland that went on to wrestle on the world stage, including Sheamus, who I interviewed once and was absolutely starstruck by, and Finn Balor. How big is this scene now, both in Ireland and internationally? Is it the global brand it was before?
Oh, it absolutely is, and it's going from strength to strength. And what's really remarkable within that, this is arguably the most popular WWE has ever been, including back through the 80s and 90s in that Hogan era. It's arguably more popular than ever before. The new Netflix deal is worth in multiple billions of dollars. And at that time where wrestling is at its peak, there is a ludicrously high representation of Irish fighters on the roster. As you mentioned, Sheamus, Finn Balor, Becky Lynch, Jordan Devlin or JD McDonagh as he is now, Lyra Valkyria from Dublin is there as well. So all these guys and girls are at the very, very top of the roster over there. They're main eventing. Becky was the first woman to ever main event WrestleMania. Becky's now in a feud with Lyra Valkyria from Dublin. So we've got two dubs going up against each other, you know, for the Intercontinental title. JD McDonagh is currently holding tag titles with Finn Balor. Like, the Irish are on top in a way that kind of blows my mind, because you go back to the days when we were watching as kids with Hulk Hogan, the highest profile Irish wrestler was Rowdy Roddy Piper, and he wasn't Irish, he was Scottish, and he wasn't Scottish, he was Canadian. So that was the closest we used to be. And now we have all these guys and girls at the very, very top of the game. It is a phenomenal achievement for an island the size of ours to have so many people punching above their weight. And it's a testament to the scene here that's been built over the last while. I mean, essentially, Finn Balor started the first school in Ireland in the early 2000s with Paul Tracy. And many people have gone through that school to go on now to be, I mean, Becky would have trained there. I myself trained there in the very early days. And that's kind of what's led to this boom over the last 20 years in Irish wrestling, up to and including the OTT stuff that you see now, where OTT is arguably one of the most important independent companies in the world, and certainly the most important independent company in Europe.
So if I had kept practicing those clotheslines and that tombstone pile driver, I too could have made it onto the international stage. Sorry, brother, for cutting you off and probably telling mum and dad about it. Angus Og McAnally, thanks so much for being my guest on News Talk Daily today.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's it from News Talk Daily Extra. I'll be back with a regular podcast bright and early Monday morning. Until then, bye-bye.